like to go see The Cure this summer here in Chicago?
I would. I would indeed. That's right up my alley. That's right, and that's hitting me right in the sweet spot. I like to say that I introduced The Cure to Granville, Ohio, which really isn't saying much since there's like
you brought it to college with
6,000 people in Granville, Ohio. But Howard Kramer, our old friend, is back with us. He is the former curatorial director at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Museum in Cleveland.
Hello, hi Anna. How are you today?
Very, very
good,
well.
Howard.
And we want
a lighter subject matter now, aren't we?
Yes.
Oh, you're on with about Prince, right?
Yes. Well, anytime a major rock star dies or
Bowie.
Has tragedy, Howard's there for us. But this is really kind of interesting because a lot of we want to talk about the summer concert season, and there are it seems like people are back out. The big acts are coming back out because people are paying the big ticket prices too.
Well, that's where artists make money and make all their own money. Very few people are actually selling music, selling records. The physical portion of the music business is essentially tanked in the past 10 years. And if they want to make money, it's selling tickets and merchandise and things around the shows.
Talk about the streaming and the downloading of the music for the 99-cent prices and stuff like that. That's got to be a tough way to make money.
Well, look at it this way. 10 years ago, the recorded music business was worth nearly $18 billion.
Mm-hmm.
So 2005, roughly. 2015, it was worth slightly over $5 billion. Two-thirds of the business disappeared, okay? Now, the digital business in that same period of time went from zero to roughly $6 billion. The net loss is still a third of your overall revenue from an entire industry that's not coming back. Now, that being the case, if you're an artist, what do you do? There's an entire generation of people who don't think music is something you pay for anymore.
Right,
That's true.
And what is interesting about it, too, is that piracy, the technology has gotten pretty good at defeating piracy. It's not perfect, but it will eventually, the digital fingerprints can eventually, get to that. But then there's going to be all the, the people of privacy advocates, and there's going to be workarounds and
well,
all.
Yeah, there's that. And I mean, and when the music business tried to do that, I mean, Sony several years ago tried to create a CD that you couldn't rip. So if you bought, at the time I did, the My Morning Jacket CD, I couldn't make a digital version of it. So I had to buy the physical one and then go download a digital one. Essentially, they were kind of prosecuting and, in fact, literally did that. Their end user. You don't build an audience by criminalizing your end user. So they're kind of the business itself is in the situation where they're not able to stop the flood. I mean, no matter where you go, someone's going to do a workaround digitally to make it happen. And I think that's why, again, getting back to people are out there, they're hitting the bricks, they're getting on stage, and they're trying to get people in to pay through the door and remain fans.
And it does work. I mean, we just had it was a full Beyonce weekend Chicago as she was here on Friday.
She came out after the rain, I heard, though. She waited for the rain to pass.
Well, it's funny. I went to the Jay-Z Beyonce show 2 years ago here, and it was, Jay-Z and Beyonce do not like to come out in the appointed time.
They're a little tardy.
Yeah, they call the show for 7:30. I mean, there's been a lot of very famous acts over the years that have done that.
Sure.
They like to keep you waiting. Madonna's like notorious for that, calling it, a 7:30 show, and then she gets on at 9:40, and you're like, hey, wait! I don't like, Howard, I don't know how you feel about this, but I always think that that's not very good.
I think, if you're a professional, you show up and respect your audience. I mean, I once waited for a Guns N' Roses show an hour and a half for Axl to finally, come on stage. Okay, I thought he went easy on us that night. But you need to respect your audience. They're coming there. They're spending their money. They're taking their time. They're stopping their lives to make you a part of it. As a performer, you have an obligation to deliver the goods to them when they expect it.
Yeah. So why do they get away with it? Do you think that there's something about the anticipation that builds up that makes it that much more exciting, or there's not much fan reaction that's negative?
What are you going to do? It's they can do it because they can.
Right.
What are you going to do? You go to the box office and say, hey, I want my money back?
Well,
there's a little contract on the back of your ticket says, no, you can't.
Sorry.
Came in, so there you go. Deal with it. Go buy another beer for, $15 and wait till they come on.
I suppose you could take to social media and get all angry, but you don't see
that
much.
Well, and actually, the fan does have a voice now because you can, through social media, really impact things. I mean, you saw what happened, this isn't music, but with that line at Midway with a guy just walking down the line. I mean, that blew up and really made the story into something. enough people want to make it something, they can do that nowadays.
Mm-hmm. All right. So in terms of the Chicago concert summer, what do you think are the do not miss? God knows if they're ever going to get back together. God knows if the band can stay together. God knows who's going to die.
Or the great venue, too. I love it when they're like a certain band is in a certain venue and it just works.
Well, it's funny that you should mention that because one of the shows that, you know, looking at the Chicago calendar that stuck out at me, that really jumped out, was Thursday, June 30th. James Taylor and Jackson Browne are playing Wrigley Field, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, these are two artists who are known for being very intimate with the crowd in their music. It's a very personal thing, and you're in the least personal sort of surrounding. Now, granted, these guys aren't the ones who are going to be running end-to-end up and down the stage all night. They're not like Jagger, right? But they're going to do something. They're really good about creating intimacy, even in the least intimate of situations. I suspect the two of them together, that audience is going to make a really, really amazing night, particularly in that venue. I mean, it really does hold so much fascination for people.
Yeah, and when the sun goes down, I mean, concerts are very interesting there to begin with, right? Because the sun goes down, and you get that same sort of halo effect there. And I will say this about Jackson Browne. That I've seen Jackson Browne a number of times. He is very finicky, depending on when, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with how he's feeling from one year to the next about things. Because he can be sort of, and I'm going to use this term, it's probably too strong of a term to use, be a little abusive to the audience in the sense that he's going to play what he wants to play, not what the audience necessarily wants to hear, right? He'll he'll only play, he's got such a catalog of hits. That he's either, you know, written for other people or, you know, for himself. And he may play, maybe he's got 20 that everybody could sing along to, and he'll play three of those and then sing a song about a whale that went nuclear in the Sea of Japan.
And you're like,
you know?
What?
And you're like, I
didn't pay for that.
I just wrote this in the bus on the way here. You know, and you're like, what are you doing? What are you doing?
Nobody came to hear that.
I mean, that's also the other thing. You know, do you just go along on the artist's journey? And I, you know, as a fan, my feeling is I'm going to go and take what they give me, and hopefully it'll be something I love. Sometimes, I mean, there are artists who are just out there to please you. They're going to come out there and play the hits. I mean, you played The Cure at the opening. Mm-hmm. I don't think at this point The Cure is going to be challenging their audience.
No.
They know who they are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this band has been around for, you know, 37 years now. Robert Smith is going to come out, still put on the makeup. His hair is going to be all frizzy. And he's going to give you probably 2+ hours of songs you know. Paul Simon, you know, who's playing, the 18th at Gravinia, he's got a brand new record coming out. He's going to play some new stuff. But the thing about Paul Simon is he has always looked at himself as a forward-thinking and forward-moving artist. And it's never been, I'm just going to sit back and play the greatest hits. He's coming out there and doing something different every time, and it's worth going along the artist journey with him because he never short-sells you, ever. His band is amazing, and you know he's as good as he ever was.
Yeah, I got to say that Paul Simon is one of those acts that you've got to see. Before, even though he's gotten, it's so funny because Paul Simon was always kind of cool looking. He now looks like your grandpa at dinner, you know, that is sort of like, is grandpa okay? But he is so, but his voice is still so pure. His musicianship is amazing. And as you point out, he brings out, he's got 25 guys in back of him who are just killing it. And the writing is, you just can't, in terms of American rock and roll artist of the 20th century, he's, in terms of writing and full production and everything, he's top 25.
He's truly one of the all-time greats. And yeah, you are right. I'm glad that he finally gave up the wig and the hat. You know, it's just like, he was fooling nobody.
Time.
He finally came clear on it. And, you know, we all benefit from that one.
It's like, you know, you could put Richard Dreyfuss out there, too. We wouldn't know who it was. You know, if you're far enough back, you're like, is that Richard Dreyfuss or is that Paul Simon?
That's right.
I think Richard's a little taller. But, you know, there's so many great shows. There's so many great shows coming this summer.
Yeah.
When I mentioned venues earlier, there are littler spots. Like, I noticed Macklemore's coming to Riviera. Some of those great old Chicago theaters still host the big acts, and I love that. There's so much history in some of our theaters. But then the City Winery, which is a smaller venue, gives a totally different concert experience, and it's small, it's intimate, and some of the, you know, CeeLo Green, I think, is coming this summer, and it feels as if you get such a different experience. But I always wonder, how does an artist get paid on a small venue like that? The tickets aren't all that outrageous.
Well, I mean, the venue certainly doesn't go into business with the objective to lose money, and they have to cut deals with the agents that make sense. The artist has to want to play that venue. It has to scale for their economics and make sense. I mean, it's very important for artists to play Chicago, and there's always traffic there. I mean, there are, like you mentioned, there are a lot of great venues, and not everybody can sell the tickets to make the money. And as an artist and agent, you don't want to leave the promoter high and dry, and you make it work. I mean, CeeLo, maybe he's in a situation where he's trying to rebuild something, you know, because he kind of has to.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot of artists who will go, I just don't want to do that thing. Let me try this because I can do it now. And I can afford to do it. And they'll pay it. It'll get paid later on at a different show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, right. Yeah. And right. Isn't that the
it
point? Is that you work with people as they're either coming back, on their way up or on their way down. That's basically how we do it in radio. We never meet people at their height because their height, they're too big for us. But believe me, on the way up and on the way down, they are our best friends.
Yeah, or if they're promoting something really hard, then they want to come by.
Yeah. Yeah. Dixie
but
Chicks are going to...
City wineries. I mean, they've done such a really good job of duplicating that format at a number of cities around the country, and it's great that they've done such a good job in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing, too. You know what's fascinating? How many country acts are going to be in Chicago.
Jason Aldean, I'd love to see that.
Well, they also have this Lake Shake that is like a whole festival of them. There is the Dixie Chicks are back out on the road. I guess they're getting along and
insulting presidents, not anymore.
I suppose they're sort of they've been sort of forgiven for it. Oh, imagine the Dixie Chicks in a Trump presidency. That would be a tough kind of sale, I would say.
Artists are permitted to speak their mind, and what happened to them, I thought was just wrong. I mean, they're entitled to say what they want. People are entitled to react, but I think it was kind of just it went beyond the pale in how they were kind of vilified for just being free thinking and free speaking artists. But I'm glad that they're working together because they are a fantastic live group. Those women know how to play, they know how to sing, and you know, they unfortunately have to carry this yoke of the red letter of being.
That's true.
You guys are journalists. Things that you have to say. Look what happened to Glenn Beck today. You know, maybe did he go beyond the pale? Maybe, I don't know. But
he always does, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Well, that's true. I'm not necessarily defending Glenn Beck as an individual, but
no,
you know,
I know what you're saying. At some point, your statute of limitations should be over, and they should be allowed to rebuild.
Oh well, yeah, for them. I mean, uttering a sentence. We do tend to be a little bit too sensitive. I mean, they weren't calling for anybody's beheading.
Exactly.
It's a separate issue.
No, but their popularity took a plunge after that.
But look at who their core audience is, though. Too. I mean, you have to think about who your core audience is.
I agree. There's something to be said about that. But as Texans, they have the right to speak their mind, and they are truly Texans.
Gosh darn it, yeah.
The truth, one thing you said, though, Earl, about country music on the road, this summer, everybody's out there. I mean, other than, I don't know, maybe Faith Hill, virtually every major country act is, you know, in some sort of package or some sort of festival situation that's going coast to coast. And it kind of underscores the real... real audiences out there in every major market and every minor market. Because the cool thing about country is it isn't just tied to, the big cities. They can play state fairs. They can play county capitals. They can play almost anywhere. And the folks show up because they believe, man. They really believe.
Oh, and I just tell you, though, too, it's also, first of all, it's very poppy, right? I mean, country has adopted a lot of, the blues rhythm and all those sorts of things, over the years. And it's suburban pop. A lot of people refer to country as. But what is interesting to me is it still sells units disproportionately to the rest of the industry. It's still people download and pay for the music, or will buy a CD or whatever is available.
Physical sales still matter in country, and to your point, if you walk into a Walmart or a Target, you'll see more new country because they still sell the most retail at this point, and even a Best Buy, than you will of any other sort of music. Everything else at that point is greatest hits.
Yeah, no, that's really true. All right, well, Howard, it's always great, man. Thank you so much. Appreciate
your
time.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Howard Kramer, former curator, director of curatorialness.
Is that the official title?
Something like that.
He knows everything about music, which is why it's so cool to talk to him.
That is true.
History, present, everything, concert recommendations, the whole package. Ed Howard.
Yep, and he was a booking agent and artist manager for gigantic groups too. Ben Harper and Los Lobos and people like that. So that's sort of why he understands the industry like no other. So Howard Kramer, very proud to have him part of the team.
Mm-hmm.